Blog Talk Radio.
Asian Pacific American Heritage Month goes way beyond the face of China, Japan, and other Eastern Asian countries. It also touches on the life stories of thousands of South Asians from Bangladesh, Nepal, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and India. And even with those five countries of origin, their religious beliefs, traditions, ethnicities, and cultures are as diverse as they come. Today, we'll focus on India and the significant contributions of the Indian American community. We'll visit the other South Asian cultures during other shows. But today, let's look at the contributions, opportunities, and challenges facing nearly 3 million Indian Americans, including Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, and CNN Global Correspondent Fareed Zakaria. Our guest today is Upendra Mishra, publisher of the India New England newspaper and former bureau chief and division editor of United Press International. It's all things India, all things Indian American or Indo-American on today's show. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we're so glad that you're joining us today. We wanted to close out our tribute and tribute to the Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, talking about South Asia. So often we look at a very large region. We had a really good webinar on Tuesday with Dr. Julia So, and on one of her slides, she showed the vast area that comprises Asia, all the way from the Russian part of Asia all the way down to Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and other parts too, and obviously Japan and China. So you're talking about a very, very large composition geographically made up of thousands and thousands of people, different languages, different religions, different ethnicities. But today we're just going to focus on India, not a small country, but a very large country, but also contributing to 3 million Indo-Americans or Indian Americans who now live in the United States or who were born in the United States. And we're going to focus on that in just a few minutes. For just a prep, I would love for you to go to my website. We're beginning to build country profiles there, and you can go to mssconnect.com, mssconnect.com, and scroll over to World Events. You'll see a tab that says Resources, and if you drop down, you'll see World Issues, and there is an article there in profile about the country of India, everything that you wanted to know about it, and also you can listen to their national anthem. We plan on having, under the members only section of that website, all the countries of the world. So ultimately, we plan on having every country in the world part of that, so that you can go and study and you can certainly learn about the various regions on the planet. And we are also very excited because our cruise is going to happen in less than a year. You have time to plan for it. April 13th through April 20th of 2013 is our Cultural Caribbean Cruise featuring Dr. Ada McKenzie, who is going to walk us through all those wonderful islands, and in particular the islands that we're going to visit, Puerto Rico, St. Martin's, and St. Kitts. Again, you can find out all about that at the website. Sign up. It's only $250 for a deposit, and you'll have an opportunity to sail with us on the Celebrity Series cruise line. The new ship is Reflections, and it's going to be an awful lot of fun, so we'd love for you to come. Go to mssconnect.com and find out all about it. In the coming weeks, I'm going to tell you about a new book that I am just finishing up as we speak called Best Practices, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. And I'm really excited about what's in it. It's going to be, I think, a great reference guide and a source of inspiration for a lot of people who want to have all those answers to their multicultural questions. So again, in the coming weeks, the book will be out at the end of June, and we will be very excited to bring it to you and tell you more about it. Well, today I want to talk about India and the importance of the Indian-American or Indo-American. I'm going to get corrected in just a few minutes whether it is Indo or Indian-American community and just how significant they are here in the United States. And I'm very happy because about 2 weeks ago, I was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, coming back from Cambridge College. I had a meeting on that campus, and I was walking back to our train station, passed by a travel agency, saw what was a very interesting publication called India New England, went inside, they gave me a free copy, and I've been reading it ever since, and I said this would really be a great show to talk about this particular publication and the Indian American community. So we have on the line with us the publisher of India New England, Upendra Mishra. Hello, Upendra. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. Now, correct me, is it Indian-American or Indo-American?
Actually, the correct word is Indian-American, but again, people get confused here with the natives here in America.
Yes.
So we prefer, we call it, to avoid any confusion, Asian Indians.
Asian Indians?
Yes.
So
that
way,
you know, it's exactly.
I see. Okay, so that's sort of clarifying from the Native Americans, obviously.
Exactly.
Here.
Exactly.
So
yes.
Native Asian. So Asian Indians.
Yes.
I bet I will write that down, and we'll make sure that gets archived somewhere.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
Well, you certainly have quite an interesting background. We'll talk to you about that in just a minute in terms of the hot spots you have been a part of in Central America back in the late 80s when lots of things were taking place politically, journalist background. Where is home for you originally?
Originally, I grew up in North India, and then I got a scholarship from Government of India, and this was an exchange program between Government of India and Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And so I came to Mexico in 1984, and then I went to El Colegio de Mexico, and then from there I got a scholarship from Carnegie Foundation to come to University of Southern California in Los Angeles, where I did my master's in journalism, and then again I went back to Mexico because by that time I had learned Spanish, and I got a great opportunity there to work with UPI. And then slowly I started working for UPI as a translator from Spanish to English. And then, became their correspondent and then eventually bureau chief and ran their entire news operations during those late 80s when a lot of things were happening in Central America and Mexico.
Right. Yeah. That's a fascinating zigzag history from northern India to Mexico and California and now Boston. What brought you to Boston?
What brought me to Boston was, my wife grew up in India. She was born in India, but basically she grew up here in Boston. And she moved with me to Mexico City after we got married in 1990.
Uh-huh.
And then she wanted to move back to Boston because her parents live here. And then also, she was expecting our first child, So we thought we'll have a child here in Boston because there was too much pollution in Mexico City at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to Boston in 1992. And then I worked for about 2.5 years at the Boston Business Journal, a local business publication here. And then after Boston Business Journal, I started my own marketing and PR firm, the Mishra Group. And then a few years later, I thought there was a very good niche market for an Indian media company in Boston who could really cover, what is happening in the Indian community here in this area.
Right.
So we started India New England. And a year later, we started a national publication called Indus Business Journal, which covers, the businesses owned by South Asians across the United States. And so we really cover this Indian community, very thoroughly in New England as well as the business-wise across the country.
Well, that's quite an interesting entrepreneurial story, too, especially with the background that you've had. Give us a sense of how different or similar is the Indian community in the greater Boston area versus Indian communities across the country. And I ask this because we're going to have some of our listeners from around the country who are going to download this show after it has happened who are going to want to know about their own area in addition to what takes place here in Boston.
Right. So, for example, you know, if you look at the Boston has about close to 43 to 45 thousand Indians in Massachusetts actually, and then total population in all six New England states is roughly about I would say about 75,000. And so again, if you look at the population wise, you know, the the New England or Massachusetts does not have a very large population.
Right.
But I think California definitely ranks number one with about, you know, 360,000 Indians in California. And then, New York and New Jersey and Texas. And so the most of the Indian population is concentrated in California, New York, New Jersey and Texas. But Boston has a small population, but very, very influential and very, very vibrant population of Indians.
How so?
Because if you look, you know, again, you know, the Boston has the largest concentration of hospitals in the world. Actually, the Boston has the highest per capita concentration of hospitals of any place in the world, in the planet, I should say.
Wow.
And Indians are, you know, there are a lot of Indians who are here. They're, you know, physicians and doctors. And so, you know, the healthcare industry in hospitals, especially if you go and, you know, go to any area of healthcare, you'll find a lot of Indians there.
Right.
So, you know, and some, you know, and then you have, you know, also the Boston has the largest concentration of educational institutions and colleges.
Right.
And so you have a lot of Indian professors. A lot of Indian students come from India. If you go to, you know, Harvard, MIT, BU, Northeastern, you know, it's just flooded with, you know, Indian students coming from India as well as, you know, the Indian population here from the United States, because education is a very, very important in the Indian culture. And there's a lot of emphasis, and, of course, Boston is hub for the, you know, great education.
Sure. Now, tell us, again, I was looking at the census numbers, and I was talking with Reverend Tan, who was our guest last week. She's from Malaysia, but she's of Chinese descent.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at the numbers where the overall average median income for all Asians is $67,000, which is still probably higher than the average median income for other American groups, but it's even higher in the Indo or the Asian Indian community, $90,000 median income. What is your response to that, Upendra, when you look at very high income Indians with the other landscape, looking at the Asian community here in the United States, let's say compared to your country of origin, India?
Well, there are a couple of factors. Number one is education, because higher the education you have in any country, higher your income is. And if you look at education of Indians in the United States, you have almost 71% Indians have a bachelor's degree or higher than bachelor's degree. And this compares with total U.S. population of about 28-29%. So you see almost, you know, more than double the, you know, Indians have, you know, the higher degree. And actually,
right.
they have the highest educational degrees of any ethnic group in the United States.
My goodness.
Whether, you know, it's a Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Chinese, or any group you go. I think the closest come is, I think, I'm not sure about the exact numbers, but I think the Japanese are the closest to the Indian in terms of education. And that is very truly reflected in the income, you know, the medium household income. And also the Indians are also very entrepreneurial too. You know, if you look at, you know, although Indians are very, you know, much known about, you know, the information technology and IT and all this stuff. But if you take any segment of U.S. population, any business, so, you know, you will find that Indians seem to be doing very well, whether you go in, you know, the information technology, of course, they own a lot of companies. And, they, you know, they are very entrepreneurial, startup, you know, start a lot of new companies. But also if you look other sectors, like, for example, if you look at the franchise, for example, franchise industry, they are, you know, really dominate the franchise industry in the United States. For example, you know, almost if you look at 40% of all rooms in all the hotels in the United States, you know, from small lodges to, you know, five-star hotels,
right.
The 40% rooms are owned by Indians in the United States. So which is, you know, and same way if you go to Dunkin' Donuts and other franchises, Subway, you know, a vast majority of them are owned by Indians. So go ahead.
It's interesting that you say that the dominance in the hospitality industry. I work a lot in hospitality as a diversity professional, and you can even look at other parts of the world. I've traveled and have connections in Kenya and East Africa, and there's also a very strong presence of the Indian community that migrated there 100 years ago and their dominance in hospitality. I have a very good friends who run a very socially responsible resort in Mombasa,
sure.
And they are of Indian descent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that particular industry would be so heavily populated by Indians.
Exactly. And then also if you go to, you know, I mean, if you take even, you know, in any sector, if you really go, there's, you see that, you know, the Indian entrepreneurial spirit, you know, and education has been very, very helpful. Like, you know, even in India, you go, there's a lot of emphasis on education. And, you know, those of us who have come here, we also place a lot of emphasis on education for our kids and all as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what really shows, you know, that you know, the Indians seem to have one of the highest income in the United States. Actually, there was about, during the boom times here in the U.S., there was a report by Merrill Lynch, and they, according to them, one out of every 10 Indian at that time, 5-6 years ago, was a millionaire in the United
States.
Wow. So you should see that, you know, again, I think education plays a very, very important role.
That's staggering.
Yeah.
And how is it for you when you look at these numbers? I mean, you have a journalist background. You are running this newspaper. How is it for you? Do you have a stronger sense of responsibility for shouldering the burdens of, let's say, Indians back in India who are not doing as well as those who are here in the United States? Is there that kind of obligation that we see in other ethnic groups?
Yes, yeah. There are actually a lot of the Indian organizations in Boston area and outside Boston area who have a very close ties with India.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing a lot of work in India. For example, there is another one group here based here in Boston called Akshay Patra, which is, basically they feed the school-going children. And they are
mm-hmm.
doing absolutely phenomenal job. There is a lot of funds and money here. And then it is sent to Indian schools. There is an American India Foundation based here in the United States. And they raise a lot of money and, try to help those people, you know, who really need help in, you know, education and all in India.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, of course, you know, there's a lot of link and a lot of people are willing to help these such causes in India as well.
What is it, how strong are the cultural connections with those who are either, I'm thinking about your children born in the United States, those who have been here in the United States for a long time, the cultural connections. I was looking at your magazine and fascinated with the weddings, and I
yeah.
would love to, A, go to India, and I'm actually writing about it in my book, B, go to an Indian wedding here in the States. I've been to temples. I've been to a temple and embrace that quite wholeheartedly. But I'm thinking about the cultures that go back centuries in India, and are they being threatened with the progress and the growth and the accumulation of things that Indians have here in the United States?
Well, a couple of things, you know, like, for example, if you look at my generation, we say in India, it is true in any culture is, you know, that, you know, the food and the music, you know, if you are born with that, you know, whatever you have learned, you know, in your beginning first 10 years, you know, that is unlikely to change. Eventually, you come back to the same type of food and same type of music and
uh-huh.
things like that.
Uh-huh.
So as far as we are concerned who are born and grew up in India and come here, we do really hanker about that. You know, we feel very closely tied to India. We still
right.
eat the same food and listen to same music and songs and everything.
Uh-huh.
But our kids who are being born here, they have a very different attitude and they have a very different style. You know, they do try to assimilate some of our cultures and, you know, our interests and taste and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they also assimilate a lot of American culture as well. And I can give you an example of my own household, you know, that I am always listening to Indian music, you know, at home, in my car and all.
Right.
And my kids, you know, very rarely listen to Indian music, you know. And once in a while, you know, I'll see this music, Indian music playing in my daughter's room, and I'll not believe, oh, my God, she's listening to Indian music. But that is, you know, very rare. So they are having, I think, you know, they feel ties to India, but at the same time, they are getting much more rooted in the American culture than anything else.
Is that a problem for you, since obviously you were born in northern India, your wife from Boston, but still such close ties to India? And again, I ask this question of others, where this first generation, these first generation Americans, American kids, are sort of separating their interests and their values from their parents. Is that an issue or a problem?
I think, yes, you ask a very good question, and I think it depends on the parents, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Just personally, in my case, it is not an issue at all, because all I want to see my kids, whatever they like, is to do that. So for me, it is not a big issue. But of course, there are certain the Indian families and Indian parents who really like their kids to, you know, marry an Indian and have the Indian culture and follow the Indian heritage. And not only their children, but they would also like to have their grandchildren do the same thing too.
Mm-hmm.
But so it depends on the family and individual families. Those people who come from a very, very conservative and traditional families in India, they do tend to believe that, you know, the kids should be raised in the Indian way. But actually, you know, my experience has been that eventually, in many cases, those impositions backfire. Because what really happens is, you know, that kids, okay, to please the parents, they will do whatever parents are asking. But, you know, eventually when they get a time, they just totally revolt against that. So you know, and I have seen that, you know, in many, many families, and I have many examples like that. But I think, you know, my philosophy is that you let, you know, that, you know, you do live your own life, whatever culture things you follow. But at the same time, you should let your kids decide what they want to do and what culture they want to follow.
Does that also apply to language in terms of insisting or, you know, making sure that they know your native tongue, should I say?
I think, you know, that's a very important, you know, the language is very important. You know, I think there's an old saying, you know, that if you want to conquer a country, you know, you first conquer that language of that country. This is, you know, old days people use. So language is very important, and especially today when we are living, you know, in the global village, the language becomes even more important.
Right.
And I think, you know, most parents and most families do want their kids to learn the native language. Sometimes it is a challenge, you know, like, you know, but I think, you know, that if the kids are exposed to the, you know, the Indian language, you know, they might revolt against that, but eventually they come back. In our family, for example, is that, you know, my wife and I, we always talk in Hindi. And, you know, and kids, you know, talk in English. And but whenever we want, you know, my wife and I am talking, you know, in Hindi, they are able to understand almost 100% what we are talking.
Good.
But when it comes to speaking, they don't speak that language.
So
the understanding is there, you know,
but the speaking is the work in progress.
Speaking, yes, exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the Woman of the Year that you featured in your publication in April?
Yes. We have, you know, this will be actually, we are going to host our 2012 Women of the Year banquet on June 28th.
And I'd love to be there. But
we would love to have you. I'll send you an invitation. We'd love to have you there.
Send it anyway. I'm going to be in Nashville at a convention. Otherwise, I would definitely make a point to come.
Okay, well, next year then. This is, you know, like, you know, Oscar night for the Indian community here in Boston area. And we have about close to every year 400 people come, you know, very well-dressed and all. And it's really, you know, who's who in the community. And, you know, and so last year we had a Woman of the Year. Her name is Dr. Manju Seth. She's a really emerging leader in greater Boston area. She's a physician by practice, but does a lot of work for various charities and Indian causes. And so she was Woman of the Year last year. This year, We don't know, you know, because it is decided by a panel of 7 judges during, you know, mm-hmm. they meet there while the event is going on. And there are certain criteria, you know, that who should be the woman of the year.
Right.
And so then make the decision. So we are eagerly waiting that who will be woman of the year this year. But apart from that, what we generally we do is that every year we honor 20 women. You know, the process is based on the nominations. You know, our readers nominate, you know, and then out of that, our editorial team picks 20. And all these 20 women are honored during the banquet. And mm-hmm. out of those 20, then judges pick up one woman of the year.
That's quite impressive. I mean, to go from 75,000 possibilities, should I say, or half of that number, down to one, that says an awful lot for the
people. Yeah, it's a very prestigious, and I think it's a very, you know, the Indian community always looks forward to this event, and already a lot of excitement is building for it, yes.
Ah, great. Well, in closing, this has been really interesting, and I certainly want to talk with you again and learn more about the Indian community here in the greater Boston area. What can you share with our audience going forward in terms of some of the issues that the community faces or some of the opportunities that you are partaking in?
Well, you know, the one thing which is very interesting with the Indian community is that, you know, although, you know, they preserve their culture and all, you know, they are very easy to integrate with other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, given their educational background, so it's not, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a very closed-knit community. You know, they're very open to integration with at work, in the neighborhood where they live. And, you know, and they are very entrepreneurial. And really, we have not come across, you know, any other really many negative issues for the Indian community, you know. But overall, I think, you know, it's, you know, people here regard us, you know, very well and very, you know, respect us a lot for what the community does. And community is very, very well integrated with overall, you know, the American culture and society, especially through kids who go to school and all this stuff. But one more thing before I forget, I wanted to, since you started the show with talking about how big India is, and sometimes, you know, you just say in terms of population, people may not grasp, okay, what, you know, the billion people mean.
Right.
So just for your listeners is that if you take India's population, it's about 1.1 billion right now, close to that. So if you combine population of all of Africa and all of Latin America together, that will equal to population of India.
Wow.
Now you can imagine how big, in terms of population, India is.
That's astounding. I know there are about 750 million people in Africa, and then obviously 200 or 300 million South America.
Yeah, exactly.
That's extraordinary.
Exactly. So it just,
really,
it puts in perspective that how many people live in India.
Well, not only that, but just, again, I'm looking at the numbers that you talked about here in the greater Boston area, the significance of the people who are here, but the significance of people in India. India is a powerhouse, along with China, Russia, and Brazil, leading forces going forward. So these are countries we need to really pay attention to and study as often as possible. We've been talking with the publisher of India, New England, Upendra Mishra. I do thank you so much for being a guest on my program. I will definitely stay in touch with you.
You're welcome.
Subscribe to your publication and learn more about the cultures of India. Thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
You are welcome.
All right, take care.
Okay. Bye.
All right. There's so much to learn, again, with, you know, some 50 or 60 countries and many, many cultures in Asia. We have just really scratched the surface. But it's a very important region in our planet. When we look at the fact that there are probably 7 billion in the world, and we're only here in the United States 300 million strong, 5% of the world's population, everyone else lives in another part of the world, and in many cases they do come here to live, to study, to work, and certainly to impact our lives. The Asian community here in the United States is thriving, it's alive, it's well, and it's extremely important. And I would just encourage you in your own walk of life to learn whatever you can about the communities that are different than you are in your respective walk in life. Thank you so much for being listeners on my show. I hope you have a great, great afternoon, evening, or week, and we'll be back next week with another important show. Take care.